Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome to episode 27 of the Cloudcast. We're coming to you live from our massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's that time of the year again where we're going to wrap up 2011 and reflect on what went well and what went not so well. And we're going to make some predictions on the upcoming year in 2012. Brian, how you doing today, man?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
Good, good, good.
Good. I just like you made Claire famous last week for her staying home from school since the holidays going on. I decided to bring somebody on at least a little bit this morning. I got my daughter Leah. Leah, you want to say hi to everybody?
Hi.
So there we go. We've got all our little ones represented on the show.
Another star is born.
That's right. All right, man. You ready to get started? All right, man. We weren't exactly sure how to do the end-of-year wrap-up show, so we just sort of made a bunch of lists. So we're not going to read people lists, but we just sort of made a bunch of buckets of things that, you know, stuff that we liked for the year, stuff that we didn't like for the year, and then maybe give people some highlights of what we may do next year. So does that sound cool?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
So I'll start off with at least, you know, my favorite things from 2011, and this is sort of specific to the show. So first and foremost, I'm amazed that anybody listened to the show. You know, I say that because I think you probably remember. I don't know if we've ever really told people this from a long time ago, but I mean, when we got started back in February, we basically did it for two reasons. One, we were I don't want to say bored with our jobs, but we felt kind of pigeonholed in our jobs, and so we felt like we needed some sort of outlet for being able to talk to people outside the context of what we were doing. So given that we would just randomly call people and say, hey, would you like to be on the show, or we'd tweet them and say, want to be on the show, I'm shocked that we've gotten to the listener base we have, which is over a couple of thousand people every week or every show or whatever. So first off, thank you to everybody who listens to the show. I'm shocked and amazed, and it's always cool when people come up to us and go, hey, we listen to the show, or we like what you guys do. So that's my first sort of favorite thing, is that this thing is still going 9 months later.
Absolutely. And something else to add to that is certainly a big thank you to all the guests. Like you said, it's amazing to me. We just kind of ping people and at least in my humble opinion, some pretty important people in cloud computing, and they're just like, yeah, absolutely, you know, look, when you want to jump on and to grab an hour of somebody's time in this industry at times is very, very hard. And so just thank you to all of the listeners, and a big thank you to all of the guests.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as far as favorite things, I guess for me, technology wise, I think it's very, very cool that we're now reaching a point. We talked to people like Cloud Passage recently, and some other people. We talked to Instratus at one point, and it feels like we're starting to get to a point, and still really early days, where whether you want to do stuff internally as a cloud, a private cloud, call it whatever you want, or externally as a public cloud, like there are some just basic click, 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 couple of simple clicks, and you're enabling some services, but they're not the primary services, but they're the services that let you manage what you want to do, that let you secure what you want to do. And I think the easier that guys like those guys make it to make your applications, which is what you really care about, deployable anywhere, secure anywhere, manageable anywhere, like I think that's a huge step. And even though they're different services, the cool thing is they're linkable. They're linkable via APIs. They're usable on multiple cloud platforms. So I think, to me, that's kind of a very cool first step, and something I'll sort of take away from 2011 is, it's starting to make some progress above and beyond, software as a service or something like
that. Oh, I absolutely agree. More than anything else, I would say 2011 was really kind of the education year, right? Kind of informing the industry of what is going on and what's available out there. I think, and you were actually, you and I were just talking about this prior to us starting, hitting the record button here. In IT silos from anywhere in the organization, could be development, could be the IT group, could be just about anyone, and how that, quite frankly, is still very dominant through enterprise IT, but everyone's starting to scratch the surface, and everyone's starting to learn, and just like we did this year, right? It's a learning process, and it's a journey, and I would say there's a lot of people that are, in the industry that are further along in the journey, but there are people that tend to be, say 2 years ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
And enterprise is catching up, and I would say 2011 was definitely the year where enterprise is starting to wake up and to start to really look at this going forward.
Yeah, I think more than anything, it's like it was the year when you went from, you know, how does the technology work, right? Which is sort of that education to people frequently coming up and asking you, like, okay, I know I got to make a plan for this. What do I do, right? And they realize, like, it's going to be a lot of steps and it's going to require some changes. And but like, it was the year, I think, where they sort of it the light bulb finally went on, like, okay, I'm not going to be able to fight this stuff. It's good in terms of the technology's viable and there's legitimate uses for this. There's legitimate business value to it. And 2012 probably starts to become that year when these plans, these sets of changes that people are making become more viable. You're not having to say, well, the organization just won't do it. It'll just be, you know, examples of people doing it. So that's cool. Yeah. I think that's very, very cool. So, well, on the other hand, you know, so those are good. What sucks? What's still broken, man?
Well, I think probably one of the biggest things I'm seeing is actual customers above and beyond the ones everyone knows about. You know, it seems like a lot of times in the industry, the big names and the big clouds that are out there, you can count the number of them on one hand or two hands and maybe even still have some fingers left over.
Right.
But at the same time, everyone knows who they are. There's, you know, who are the new cloud people? Who are the new ones that, hey, look at us, we're doing cloud and we've been successful at it. That's probably one of the biggest things that, you know, I feel like the when we started the podcast and now, if we look at the cloud customers, they almost seem to be the same. No new big names have popped up in the last, you know, 8 to 10 months.
Right, right. Yeah, you hear Zynga, you hear Netflix, you hear, you know, the guys at Cisco IT are starting to talk about some things. You know, Christian Riley always used to talk about what he was doing at Bechtel, but, you know, who else, right? That it's, like you said, it's way too small a number of people that say, we're actually doing clouds, whatever that means. And obviously there's, you know, there's online services that are providing things, you know, Azure has stuff and Salesforce.com has things. But in terms of like the customers doing it, you're right. The number's way too small and we keep hearing the same examples over and over again. And that, I think the problem with that is ultimately, you know, if you're a business and you keep hearing the same names over again and maybe you dismissed them before because you said, well, they're not like me, you know, people tend to go towards things that look like them, that sound like them, that feel like them. And unless they're hearing more of those, and maybe those are, you know, there's a marketing need in the community, that vendors need to show things more, whatever that is, that's definitely needed. And like, I think what that sort of plays out is that when you hear various analyst people say, you know, oh, well, you know, 25% of customers, 30% of customers, 40% of customers think they're doing cloud. It's like, yeah, maybe they are just doing virtualization. Maybe they are, it's just some shadow IT stuff with a couple of SaaS applications. And you know, there still is, you know, hopefully there still is huge number of opportunities to do new things with this stuff. And it's not just, you know, people kind of cloud washing stuff.
So, yeah. And I'll say this for the listeners too. I'll challenge you to think about this. If you're familiar with virtualization and the virtualization adoption, if you've kind of been around this industry for a while, well, the adoption of cloud, in my opinion, is very similar to the adoption of virtualization in the fact that, you know, when I started doing this, oh gosh, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, and it was like you could name the number of virtualization customers on one hand, and then people started dabbling in it a little bit, and then you kind of had this, you know, rogue IT, shadow IT kind of doing virtualization, and then they got on board with it, and then it started picking up, and then eventually you had it to where, I wouldn't say it's the majority, but certainly a significant portion of most customers are on virtualization. But then what happens is there's the, you know, unicorns and rainbows of 100% virtualized. Well, that really doesn't happen. And I think everyone's kind of been marching towards that goal for years in the virtualization industry. And I would say as of probably this year is when you start really hearing the talks of it. It's not from 100% virtualization to, well, you know, we virtualized everything we can. And I think what's going to happen is with cloud going forward, you will have a certain amount of customers who, hey, they might still run some applications on bare metal. You might have some that just virtualize everything because that's just the easiest thing to do, and it's not cloud-friendly, if I use that term. And then you have a certain amount of line-of-business applications in the organization that are in the cloud. You might have, instead of a two-fold hybrid model, a three-fold hybrid model going forward. And so it might be bare metal, it might be virtualization, it might be cloud. Who knows? I don't think that the 100% cloud necessarily realistic, the same way 100% virtualized wasn't realistic. I don't know that everyone's kind of come to that conclusion yet. So I guess maybe going forward, maybe that's a prediction for me for 2012, right? Yeah. Everyone will kind of wake up and that light bulb will go off.
Yeah. Well,
it's not all or nothing.
Yeah, and I think the thing I've found in terms of layout, how long things take and how long cycles take, I always seem to find, like, you know, big technology changes, at least these days, tend to take about 3 or 4 years. And so what you have is maybe that first year you've got the really bleeding edge people that are figuring stuff out, you know, with the earliest of tools and the earliest of systems, and they're playing with standards, and they're so you've got a year of that. Then you get that sort of the next year becomes a lot of people jump on the bandwagon. You get the, you know, in this case I'll sort of single out, you know, kind of the crowds, like the cloud or rowdy kind of clouds and stuff, but those guys tend to be about 2 years ahead of when things are mainstream, but they're out there making a lot of noise about it, they're making a lot of buzz about it, you know. And then you have, you know, a couple of years of people kind of getting down to the reality of, okay, how do I actually do this stuff, how do I deploy this stuff, does it actually make sense? They work through sort of Gen 1 and Gen 2 products. And so I think in terms of that cycle, 2011 was a lot of people making noise, the end of 2010, 2011, and so I think, you know, 2012 will be those first, you know, month 12 through 18 through 24 of what those cycles look like of people, you know, going and deploying this stuff. And the thing that'll be interesting is, you know, depending on what the economy looks like, right? When economies are good, people talk a lot about the big picture. And when economies are bad, people tend to they tend to change more because, you know, they actually have an economic driver to do it, right? They don't have as much money, but they still have all these business things to do. And so sometimes that's a good thing, sometimes that's a bad thing. So it'll be interesting to see how much, like, the economy and people being worried about election years affect what 2012 does. But actually, you bring up an interesting thing when you were talking about, you know, will it be 100% this, 100% that? You know, the other thing for me that's missing, that's a little bit disappointing, is we don't have a whole lot of, you know, quote unquote hybrid cloud implementations, or even really very clear ways for people to do that. I think we hear, Amazon the last couple of weeks has been announcing a few little tweaks to their virtual private cloud, which is sort of a hybrid-y thing, but it's, you know, it's ultimately more of a just an on-ramp into their public cloud. You hear, VMware talk about, well, the way to get to hybrid cloud is basically put the same thing on both ends of the pipe, put it on internal data center, put it up in some service provider. But there's still a big gap there, right? I mean, the ability to actually be able to, you know, move a workload, move capacity, take on capacity dynamically, it still feels like there's a big gap there. And then, yeah, you know, and then you've got somebody like Microsoft who, my goodness, they should have the greatest story of anybody because of the footprint. they should, right?
I mean, they have the greatest application install base. Their development platforms are, I wouldn't say the dominant one, but certainly one of the big ones, right? And so they kind of own the development, they own the applications, they own the you know, whether you like it or not, they own the operating systems market. I mean, they own everything, right? They just can't seem to slap it together.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think they should be like the most primed to do a great sort of hybrid environment. And I think I would guess, and I don't, you know, have any insight into this, but just having worked at vendors that are going through transitions, like, there's got to be daily fights between their online cloud guys and the guys who make the package softwares to figure out, you know, who should get the money for, you know, Word or the OS or whatever. But that to me is, you know, the other, you know, or at least one of the really big, like, when is that going to materialize? Because we talk about it a ton, but it doesn't. It feels like there's a big gap between the talk and the actual reality. So.
Yep. And so something else to think about is, and I had this conversation at a customer briefing recently, and it was really interesting to me. You know, we were just kind of talking about, you know, private infrastructure, just straight up old infrastructure versus the complete opposite end of the spectrum going to public cloud. And we were kind of just talking through everything, just open dialogue, and somebody mentioned, well, you know, what we'll probably do is just buy all our gear and put it in a colo. And I was like, oh, okay, so you're going to take your entire data center and put it in a colo, and that's okay. And they're like, yeah, absolutely. But what's the major leap from, and sorry for people that don't know, colo is a co-location facility, you know, one of those big data centers where you pay a bunch of money and they host your gear, so you don't have to operate an actual physical data center. So I got to do definitions real quick. but you know, what's the leap from doing a colo versus a public cloud or private cloud hosted by a colo facility? The only difference is the gear is yours, and you get to kind of hug it, versus it's, you know, across the aisle in the exact same data center operated by the colo facility. And they kind of were like, oh, okay. You could kind of see the light bulbs going off of, oh, you know, if I'm willing to put my gear somewhere else that isn't on my site and somebody else manages the operations of all of the gear, well, it's not that much of a leap to go from the operations of the gear into the management and the actual, you know, stuff that IT does day to day. And you know, so what is the – where I'm going with all this is what are the pain points that cloud could address? And what is the message out there? A lot of times is, well, you just need to rewrite all your applications, and we just need to do this and do that, and it seems too daunting. And a lot of times what enterprise IT people need is just what's the pain point you're addressing, and how easily can I move this, and what's a real pain point today, right? And find something that's a comfortable transition where it just doesn't sound like a big, huge forklift upgrade.
Right.
Where I have to rip and replace everything. That's just, people don't like that.
Yeah. Well, and in your case, you know, you're sort of the colo is, you know, the problem there becomes the, you know, I don't have enough space, right? So I'm looking at like physical space, I'm looking at real estate, you know, like the workplace resources, people are sort of driving those discussions, which, you know, those are valid problems for certain people. They run out of data center space, they don't have enough power and cooling, they don't want to invest in buildings, they don't want to own those sort of assets, but, you know, they'll own the equipment. That's one set of problems. There's, you know, there's going to be the next set of people who say, look, I don't want to invest in the skills, and so I'm willing to, you know, look at outsourced and managed services and various types of stuff. So, you know, we're going to see all those things. I think, you know, if you were to stack rank those in terms of the types of problems that people have versus the types of problems that people are willing to address, the rewrite your applications is probably at the very top or bottom of the scale, depending on how you look at it, of what they're not going to do. Right.
Yeah.
I we hear all the time, like, well, you could rewrite your application for cloud, or which application should move to cloud. I think, look, if it's an old application, like, there's no chance it's getting rewritten, right? It's, you know, there's a reason people buy new cars, because they run better, they run faster, they're safer, and, you know, a small niche of people restore that 65 Mustang, but it takes them 10 years in the shop, right? It's the same thing with old applications. Like, they're not going to get changed. The interesting thing to me will be, and, you know, we've got a couple of buddies who've been playing with this. Christian Riley's been playing with it. Clint Greenwood's been playing with, you know, some of the PaaS platforms like Cloud Foundry and others. You know, they're already starting to sort of ask the questions like, well, when will I be able to get like an enterprise version of this, right? So, like, I love the idea of write a new application, right? Don't rewrite the old stuff, but write a new application, potentially have it be portable. But, you know, I do want to have the option to run it internally, because that's, you know, one of the value propositions of these open PaaS platforms. I don't think that's there yet, right? That's, you know, I think that goes in the list of things that's sort of missing. And I think, you know, having talked to guys like Isaac Roth and talked to Dave McCrory and, you know, earlier in the year when we did, I think those are probably still a long ways off in 2012. I think what we'll see for the PaaS platforms is they'll stay mostly public, mostly sandboxy sort of things, mostly, you know, focused on, you know, external developers, and it'll probably be maybe end of 2012 before we'll see them be, somebody can go, hey, I just stood up a Cloud Foundry instance inside my data center, right?
So, and to kind of close off this, you know, what's missing list, just to kind of summarize pretty much everything we've just talked about is what is the feature, and I'm using air quotes around the feature, that is going to be the pain point or drive most enterprise shops to actually look at or create a scenario where an adoption of some kind of cloud platform makes sense. Now, and I'm going to throw out my prediction here. You know, again, the enterprise IT background guy, the DR as a service cloud aspect is really fascinating to me. Amazon recently released a white paper about how to do this, and talking to some of the hosting facilities here in the Raleigh area, that's actually very, very hot topic right now. Is, you know what, I don't want to deal with the stuff I already do day to day, and I don't want to put that in the cloud just yet. But that whole DR thing, that's just a huge pain in the butt, and I have to manage another facility and manage gear, and I got to do replication of all my data from one site to another site, and I'm, you know, maybe if I'm a good enterprise customer, test it, you know, 2 to 3 times a year, maybe 4 times a year, and it's there for, you know, in case you need to hit the big red button. But it's also very, very, very expensive and costly. Yep. And so, you know, maybe that is something that is very easily transferred to the cloud, where the whole concept of move everything, your entire DR site, to the cloud, and you only pay for it when you need it. You only pay for it when you test it a couple times a year, and you only pay for it when you hit the big red button.
Right.
That to me seems like a huge cost savings to an enterprise IT shop, and certainly something worth looking at. And it seems like one of those low risk, you know, low hanging fruit kind of things that I could see adoption happening.
Yep. Yeah. No. Definitely potential low hanging fruit, and we'll have to get a couple of people on in 2012. So I think we'll grab the folks from Winstar/Hosted Solutions, our buddies locally, to talk about what they do sort of on a regional basis on the show, and then it'd be cool to get Sam Johnson, who's over at Equinox now, because I know he's doing some pretty interesting stuff where you know, they're trying to, in essence, deal with the speed of light bandwidth problem, and they're trying to say, look, you should, you know, in essence, co-locate certain things, you know, closer to the big pipes on the internet, you know, to be able to get around those things, right? I mean, if you're doing DR, you've got, you know, huge amounts of data to move, huge amounts of data to move back. So I think maybe between, you know, what Sam does over in Europe, which might be kind of cool, and he's always opinionated, we'll talk to the local guys like Windstream, and then maybe we'll ping our buddies over at Switch, because, you know, Lord knows they have as much bandwidth as anybody on the planet, and talk to them about the cool stuff they're doing. So yeah, I think that's a good topic to bring up, because yeah, you're right, it's low hanging fruit, and it's something that it's like insurance. Nobody wants to think about it, but it's you know, it's a nightmare when you have to push the big red button.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
So, you know, so beyond the stuff we think's missing, right? So we know what we liked. You know, good year. Some stuff's missing. What confuses us still? Anything that we talked about all year that we're still like I'm scratching my head about?
You know, probably, and I already addressed it. My biggest thing is why does cloud have to be all or nothing?
Yep.
And why, you know, how do you do the baby steps? So how can you do the crawl, walk, run model and not go from crawl to run? That is far and away the biggest thing for me. And again, the enterprise customer references, certainly far and away the biggest thing for me. How about you, Brian?
So I think that's good. I think I'm a little worried we may have to include cloud now in the discussion of things not to discuss. It'll be like politics, religion, and cloud, at least at a party.
Well, and the other thing, you know, you bring up something interesting too. You can't discuss it without defining it. So
yeah.
What I would really like to see is, and even James Urquhart did a great post recently, basically, you know, what is an application? And it's, you know, what is the definition of is, right? And so we have to figure out what, you know, anytime you talk to a customer, well, what do you think cloud is? And what do you think this is? And what do you think that is? And you spend the first half hour just defining what the heck everyone's talking about so you can all talk the same language with the same words. Because cloud means different things to everyone, right? And that's...
Yep.
The lack of clear definitions around the market is also very frustrating right now.
Yeah, anytime you're doing nothing but definitions, all that means is you're having meetings and involving consultants. So yeah, it needs to move past that. So I think like I've got a list of three things, and I'm not gonna lay them all out here because the show will run too long. I'll write up a blog or something about them. But I think that the two things that I'll touch on quickly, you know, all this talk about, you know, what's the next desktop look like, or if I ever hear, you know, 2012 is the year of VDI again, I may have to jump off a cliff. I mean, to me, it's like talking about VDI anymore, and you know, some folks will beat me up on this, but you know, VDI sort of has its place. It's a niche-y thing. It's great for, at least in my opinion, if you have a fixed desk, you know you're going to go through some sort of upgrade to, you know, Windows 7 or Windows whatever. I can't even keep up with them anymore. And you know, you want to do sort of like, you know, periodically change who's in front of that thing. So it's great for labs. It's great for, you know, teaching environments. It's probably great for call centers. And but please don't try and shove it down my throat that I need VDI in 2012 as a person who's on the move. And I don't want to hear that at all. So that still confuses me. I understand people want to talk about it because it, you know, drives sales or something like that. But like, the use cases aren't interesting to me. I know they exist. And then the other one that still confuses me, and having been at the networking companies forever, you know, all these different ways to do networking for virtualization is, I'm scratching my head. I mean, I understand them, but at the end of the day, there's two pieces that kind of confuse me. One is everybody is wrapped around the axle like so tight about this idea of like doing, you know, live migration of workloads between locations. And you know, some guys out there, you know, Scott Lowe had a really nice set of posts about this this week. Ivan and Greg from Packet Pushers talk about this all the time. Like, even when the long distance vMotion stuff came out, like, to me, I looked at that and immediately went, there's only a couple of places, even on the planet, where that matters, right? It's across the river between New York and New Jersey, because you have enough bandwidth. It's potentially in Hong Kong, because you've got the Asian financial markets. It's maybe in London, where you have those financial markets, and maybe in the Bay Area, where, you know, which is a scary enough place as it is, because, you know, you've got earthquakes. But at the end of the day, is it really worth all that effort to blow up your network, or at least mangle your network in ways to where you're like, okay, I'm going to do DR of like live, or not DR, like movement of live applications. And it's like,
right. That higher level than DR.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, all these things that are coming out, VXLAN and NVGRE and all these different things. And you know, it has to be tied to this software switch, and maybe it can be in hardware, and maybe I got to flood things, and maybe I got to stick multicast in the middle of this. And like, I keep coming back to this, and I'm going, all that work, all that potential things blowing up, and yeah, there's some technologies to make them work, but all those things potentially blowing up for, what's the savings? 10 minutes? 20 minutes of maybe a migration? Versus being able to say, look, I can migrate some stuff in Windows, you know, normal Windows that I could do, and if you've got enough bandwidth, great. If you don't have 5 millisecond latency, which is basically an OC12 between your two sites, don't even think about this. I don't know. It feels like a lot of crazy yoga to be able to have a very, very niche use case, right? I understand the guys who are saying, look, I'm a service provider, I'm running out of VLANs, and so I need some ways to deal with that. Or, you know, I want to do more efficient movement of VMs within a rack or within a couple of pods within the, you know, a section of my data center. But this idea of like moving stuff all around the planet and follow the sun and follow the moon, and like, it just feels like it's a technology looking to create more problems. And so that'll be an interesting one to shake out. I the one thing I heard, and I'll get off the soapbox, is I was watching one of the Packet Pushers or the Network Field Day or something videos, and I think it was Ivan Pepovic, I think that's his last name. I always spell it wrong, but he's the dude on Packet Pushers, super smart guy. And he basically just said, well, like, why don't you put like Lisp, right? The idea of like, you know, the, you know, IP address mobility that works like cell phone mobility, like just put that in the soft switch, put it in the edge switch, and then put it potentially in the access layer of the switches, and then they deal with it, right? Like, you don't have to build these overlays, you don't have to build these tunnels, you don't, like, you just like make it a native routing function. And it got dismissed, but I'm like, boy, that makes more sense than anything. And yeah. I don't know if it's just because no vendors support it, so people kind of ignore it, or if he's way too smart for everybody else, and conceptually people can't wrap their head around it, and they go, well, if VMware didn't say it, it doesn't matter. And but between, but right. kind of between those two things, I'm like, boy, we have way bigger legitimate problems to deal with than, you know, am I going to get a virtual desktop, or, you know, what's that cost, or, you know, how much am I going to mangle my network to do that? So I'll write some stuff up because I have some other things on my list of things that confuse me and that got talked about. But so let's talk about, like, we're getting to the point in the show where we ought to figure out either predictions for 2020.
Yeah, we're asking a lot of questions, right? We need to at least put our neck out. And
so let's do this before we do predictions. So give me your short list of people that we want to have on the show and why we want to have them on for 2012. Maybe they're listening.
Yeah, so probably the top of the list for me is actually Hoff. And it's just because it's become a running joke more than anything else. You know, you and I got to spend some time with him hanging out in the lounge at I think it was it VMworld? I don't know. It was one of the conferences in Vegas.
Somewhere late in a bar, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, just he's an entertaining dude, super smart dude, and really just like to hear his views on the ever-changing facets of the industry. So he's without a doubt my number one.
All right. Although I think he's going to be our white whale. I don't think we'll ever get him. He's like Moby Dick. He'll be like our whatever.
Yeah, and you know, so the other, you know, some other people. I'd love to get the Amazon guys on.
Jeff Barr. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to get some time with Jeff to really talk through some of the Amazon things, because you know, they really are the rate of adoption of new features is quite frankly just amazing. Yeah. You know, like them or hate them, you got to give them credit. Yeah, for what they're doing.
Yeah, I think the one thing about Amazon that you kind of have to respect is you sort of have to say, look, probably two things, right? One, I mean, they've spent 5, 6, 7 years or whatever now, like getting all of the orchestration, all of the tooling around their platform in place, right? So for anybody that thinks like, I'm going to drop a piece of software in and tomorrow I'll have a cloud, there's some work to be done there. Now, you may not need to be as scalable or as efficient as what Amazon does, but, you know, from a timeline perspective, like, you're not getting cloud. If you're trying to build it yourself, it's not coming in a week. It's going to take some time, right? And it's going to take some smart dudes. The other thing that impresses the heck out of me, and this is the trick that everybody has when they're trying to figure out strategies, is they basically march to their own drummer, right? They basically say, look, we're committed to the stuff that we're committed to. We're not going to support everything. You know, we're gonna have a set of tools that work. We're going to support certain things. And they don't get into this, well, if we offer people 10 different options, that'll be the best way to do it because that will satisfy everybody, which is what a lot of, you know, sometimes vendors do or SIs do or whatever, is they say, well, we're going to have 6 different solutions because I've had this customer ask for it or that customer ask for it. And Amazon sort of says, look, we have an offering. If you like it, great. And if you don't, that's fine, because we think we can build our business on, you know, being really, really good at what we do. So, yeah, no, it'd be cool to have those guys on.
And one more before I flip it over to you. I want to have AD from Dell back on to talk about Hadoop. We owe him. He's our one outstanding rain check, right? We said we'd have him back on to kind of do a completely Hadoop and big data focused show. And I really would like to do, you know, Hadoop 101 or big data 101. And I think he definitely would be the perfect guy to get on for that. So he's definitely another one.
Yeah, so we'll get him. We may have to bring a few others as well, but no, we owe him, if nothing else, and I think we got to figure out big data. I think my list, so we're going to have a couple of real smart lawyer types, although I don't want to scare anybody off. We're going to have lawyers, but we're going to talk about laws and regulations and stuff. That one's lined up. I want to have some actual developers who deal with these PaaS platforms. Like, I don't necessarily, you know, we heard from all the vendors this year. That was cool. I'd love to hear from some of the guys who are developing this stuff. So we'll have to go seeking out some of them to figure out what's their mindset. What goes on in their head. So they're on my list. The big data guys, like you said. I'd love to have some of the guys from Microsoft on. Like, we've never had Microsoft on. I'd like to kind of see what's going on up in there. Like we said, I mean, it's just such a huge opportunity, and whether it's a good thing or a bad thing that they are where they are, it'd be good to understand, just because for better or for worse, like, we're not getting rid of Word and Office and you know, some of those tools anytime soon. So But if you could move them to the cloud and leverage them in the cloud, and maybe there's some new cool stuff that comes with that, that would be kind of good. So, all right, man, time for predictions. At least make one, and then let's talk about what we're going to do for next year. You know, like what you and I.
Probably the biggest thing for me, I think this year you will actually see the business cases, use cases, pain points, whatever you want to call them, formally develop in the market. I think what had happened is this year a lot of the big vendors or the big cloud companies out there kind of said, here's how you need to do it, and you just need to do it because it's awesome. And everyone kind of went, well, yeah, no, not so much. And so, you know, definitely a course correction in the messaging and how to relate, right? I definitely think there was a disconnect this year. And I think that, okay, you guys got to talk the same language and at the same levels. And I think you will start to see that happen this year.
So I've got one for a prediction and one for a thing to watch out for. So on the prediction platform, I think we're going to see, so we talked early on about, like, you know, the number of sort of visible cloud kind of companies and so forth we think is too small. I think we're going to see at least two or three, and these will be sort of well-known names, and I don't have any inside information, but I think we're going to see a couple of, you know, company, big well-known name companies where the CIO, the CFO or whatever, either based on the economy or based on, you know, some changes in their business, that they're going to basically come out, like there was a company, a French company, who came out and basically said, we're not doing email anymore.
Yeah, I
think we're going to see, you know, a big bank, or we're going to see a big insurance company or automotive company or somebody who's going to come out and they're going to say, we are going to enable, you know, four or five things that you never would have said, like, we're going to do that before. And they're just going to sort of say, look, we're going to break all the rules and we have to because, you know, either financial reasons or competitive reasons, and cloud's going to play a huge role in that. So I think come this time next year, come, you know, the fall trade shows next year, you're going to have, you know, four or five, you know, companies that you're going to go, yes, did you see that, you know, so-and-so is doing this thing radically? And I think that'll end up being a really big change. I think the other one, and this isn't a prediction, but I think, you know, everybody always wants to guess, like, who's going to buy who and who's going to do what. I think the two companies that'll be the most interesting, I think Oracle, because, you know, with them missing their numbers this last quarter and Larry having a crap load of money and Larry kind of, you know, dancing around cloud, I think every mid-sized company is going to get a phone call from them, and everybody they're going to be talked about as, you know, potentially getting sucked up by Oracle, whether they're a software company, an open source company, or whatever. Yeah. And then the other one that'll be really interesting, because they have a ton of money but no money in the United States, or limited money in the United States, is going to be Cisco, right? Came out with this big Cloudverse announcement, and people weren't really sure what they were doing in cloud. They've got, you know, Lou Tucker, and they're reorganizing, and so it'll be really interesting to see between those two companies if either one of them makes a really big move, because they have enough money, they're big enough in the industry, but they're also, you know, somewhat threatened in terms of whether it's, you know, Cisco and hardware margins, whether, you know, that's true or not, or it's Larry and his, you know, his ego about, you know, we missed a quarter, we need to make a big change. And yeah. So those are my two things to watch and predictions.
Well, I'll throw two other companies at you as well. I mean, I don't necessarily think that they're as big as those, but maybe a step down is what is going to be VMware's plans for the year, and what is going to be Citrix plans for the year, and which direction, because typically they overlap, you know, and they seem like really big competitors, but they definitely have, you know, oh, VMware's better in this area and Citrix is better in this area, and they kind of have their expertise within the companies, even though they do a lot of the same things. Well, what is their direction going forward, and will it be the same? How will they approach it? Will it be all about mobile devices and application virtualization, and at what level does everything happen, and how does that play into each of the company's strengths? That'll be very interesting to me to see how they both approach, you know, the cloud versus just straight up virtualization. What are their plans going forward?
Yeah, I think Citrix, I mean, you and I have talked about this. I mean, I think Citrix has less of a portfolio challenge and more of a marketing challenge, right? They have a bunch of pieces, but I don't know that anybody can tell their story. Hint, hint, Peter Ulander. I think you got a big job in 2012.
We need to have him on again too.
Yeah, he's awesome. No, I think he's up for it. So I think they got a marketing challenge. I think VMware's is, I think they have a gap. I think they got a gap between this enormous virtualization hypervisor cash cow and something like Cloud Foundry, which is going to be awesome, but the gap between the skills and the technologies in between those things, it's like, do they need to drive, you know, sort of a shift change around networking, which, you know, they kind of always hint around? Do they be more in security space that actually, but some things that will drive revenue that won't be purely hypervisor, but won't be this, you know, 4, 5, 10 year down the road thing like Cloud Foundry. So now that's a really good, you know, like who's gonna make a big move, and you know they'll be moving, watching each other very, very closely.
I was gonna say one more I wanted to throw out there real quick too was, how will the business partners, resellers, you know, distributors of the world change how they approach their customers in 2012? Because yep, it's really been coming to a head for a number of years, but certainly I think next year it's you know, it may or may not be the year of VDI, it may or may not be the year of PaaS, and, you know, let's go ahead and call that now, because then we can say we've been calling it since 2011, so that when it, you know, hits in a couple of years, we can say we were first.
Yeah, so, so 2012, not the year of VDI, or PaaS.
It's the year of PaaS, we're going to call it. but you know, because what happens is a lot of the resellers out there, they make a lot of money kind of slapping the pieces together and making everything work, and kind of working at those very low levels, because quite frankly, there's good margins in it. There's a lot of great profits in slapping stuff together.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, there is.
With private cloud and public cloud, you're not slapping stuff together. You're getting, you know, a converged infrastructure platform, you're getting something that is hosted somewhere who knows where. The infrastructure kind of gets boring and goes away.
Yep.
And what does that mean for resellers, and how do they change and adopt to change their revenue streams and stay alive? And historically, those pork barrel projects that they had before, they're just not there anymore.
Yep. Yep. So let's talk about what we're doing for next year. You always got to add stuff. Always got to change stuff. What's gonna be new for you in 2012?
First of all, I'm in the process of redoing my blog. I don't know what I'm doing or how I'm doing it, but you know, I'm going to change my focus. I recently, within my company, have changed jobs slightly. So I'm going to be very much more focused on management, orchestration, you know, private cloud aspects within my company. So you'll see a lot more of that coming out in the blog. There's certain things from work I can talk about and certain things I can't talk about, but it's really for me going out and seeing the rest of the industry. So, you know, I'm probably going to go get an AWS account, and I'm probably going to go get some of these PaaS platform accounts. And so the blog will become much more active for me around exploration of all the options that are out there. So you probably see, historically my blog has been very infrastructure focused. It's been NetApp, it's been EMC, it's been VMware, it's been, you know, Cisco UCS Blades, and quite frankly, I don't do that much with it anymore. And I've been doing nothing with the blog, quite frankly, because I didn't know exactly what to do with it. And I was like, you know what, fine, I'm just going to, you know, change it over to this focus, because it's, you know, it's kind of an evolution of me as an individual, and that's going to be my big focus going forward. I'm also going to be speaking at Cisco Live in London coming up at the end of January, which I'm really, really stoked about.
Cool.
So I'm going to be doing a management and orchestration talk at Cisco Live, and as the details get finalized, you know, I'll let everyone know. But those are my biggest things. Yeah, I definitely want to. I'd like to do some whiteboards like you did. So for those of you that don't know, go search. I think it's the CloudCastNet, right?
We did a few whiteboards. We just kind of, you know, we stuck a flip camera in a room. And
you're
a
going
whiteboard.
Viral, man. You're good. You know, I think one of them has like over 1,000 views already, and so there's some great videos out there that you just kind of talking in front of a whiteboard. I'd really like to do some of those as well. I got to find some topics, and you know, maybe we'll just start we'll be a YouTube sensation as well on top
of
this, right?
That's right. So here's my one piece of advice as you change the blog, right? So now it's blog.aarondelp.com. I think if you're gonna change it up, if you're really gonna make a change, I think you completely whore yourself out and you go get a .xxx domain. You know,
right,
and if nothing else, you're going to drive a ton of traffic, and you know, as long as you come up with a cool name, like I don't think you can get cloud.xxx. I think that's taken, but there's a lot of varieties of something cloud.
Does your lender have cloud.xxx?
He probably does. Peter, yeah, he's sneaky that way.
How but about you, man? What do you have coming up this year?
So I got a new job. But, you know, as we've always said, like, we're not going to let our jobs interfere with doing this stuff. Hopefully, you know, we can keep doing this and not get fired or vice versa. So I'm playing with a couple of things. One, sort of me personally, I like to teach. I've always said that I'd get out of technology in a heartbeat if I could make any money teaching. And God bless teachers and professors and all that sort of stuff. But I'm going to do something on. I'm going to do some coursework on a site called Udemy. Udemy. Udemy.com. They let you basically make up classes and trainings and teachings and stuff, and you can do it in different ways. And so I'm going to make some. I'm going to do some cloud computing stuff on Udemy. Hopefully, get that done in the next couple of weeks before I get into being full bore on the new job. And then I've been talking to a couple of people behind the scenes. We're going to have some new guests hosts on the show. So, you know, the biggest problem that you and I have is, unfortunately, life happens, and scheduling of the show is tricky sometimes. So we've got a couple of sort of interesting personalities who are like, dude, I'd like to do a show. I know some people. We could have some interesting things on there. So for listeners, you may hear some shows that don't involve either one of us, but we'll make sure they're interesting. We'll make sure the hosts are interesting and the guests are interesting. And then, you know, the other thing that, you know, you and I have been kicking around for a while, and I don't know exactly how we'll do this, but one of the crazy byproducts of this, of us, you know, doing this thing is we get calls all the time now and emails from like startup companies. And some of them are, you know, PR driven, and that's fine. But we do get some calls from some cool startup companies. And we're trying to figure out, like, how do we do short form shows where we can kind of introduce some of those people, because, you know, they've got good stories, they're interesting personalities. So you and I are going to keep talking about how do we get some of these new startups, because sometimes the newest startups have cool ideas. So we want to make sure we figure out a forum to help them without, you know, making it impossible to schedule and edit and produce and stuff like that. So you know, a couple new forms of media, and you know, my biggest thing for 2012 is, you know, 2011 was so much fun meeting all sorts of new people. I'm hoping 2012 is the same way.
Yep, I agree.
All right, listen, dude, I think we're getting to the end. So you want to take us? Yeah, Leah's.
I heard
Leah,
that.
Yeah, Leah's trying to sneak back on the show. Leah, you want to say one last thing before Mr. Aaron turns the show off?
Happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays
there
to everybody.
You go.
All right, Aaron,
awesome.
You want to take
Thanks,
us home?
Leah. Yeah, absolutely. So before I do the usual outro, I just want to say real quick, too, if you like the podcast, and you're actually still listening to this podcast since this one is running long, go give us a five-star review on iTunes, but only do it if it's a five-star review. If it's not going to be five-star, then you know, don't do it, because we want some five-star reviews.
That's right.
So definitely, if you have some time, we would certainly appreciate it if you would mind rating us on iTunes. Other than that, you can follow us on Twitter at thecloudcastnet, or you can reach us at thecloudcast.net, where you find links to the show and show notes. You can leave us a comment, you can email us, or you can stream the show on Stitcher. Thanks for listening.